Welcome to Women in Comedy, the podcast with your host, Jasmine. Tal is here in spirit, guys. Keep listening. And my guest today is the lovely and talented and beautiful and wonderful Elisa. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, perfectly.
Cristallo. No. Yes. Is it Italian?
Yes, it is.
Ah, yes. Bella.
Bella. That one Bella? I know. I probably know three words of actual Italian. Oh, so yes. My own name and then maybe two other words.
What are the two other words?
Bella and ciao.
What about grazie? It means thank you.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Three. So actually you're teaching me Italian as we go. The name certainly is though.
Oh, well, I actually went to an Italian, a nice Italian place the other night in King's Cross. And when I say King's Cross and Sydney and nice Italian food, other people probably like, no, you're funny. No, it was. And it was really lovely. And it was actually three authentic Italians there. They were speaking Italian. So I tried to show off a little bit. And I was just like, when I brought out my vegan pasta, I was like, grazie. And then later on, I think the chef, he said, grazie. And then he said, Bella or ciao Bella or something like that. And I got confused. And then I said, thanks in English. And I walked away thinking, I should have said something in Italian. What am I doing?
Missed opportunity. You'll have to go back for another meal.
Unacceptable. We're not in Italy, but it was so refreshing to have Italian food made by Italians.
Yeah. And it is, they, if you just give them a bit of effort, just try your Italian, they love it. So right. They was probably like, yes, I'm going to make this dish perfectly. How was the meal?
It was really nice. I think it was the arrabbiata. Again, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's like a spicy kind of tomato Italian dish with like spaghetti, and I just had it without the cheese. And so I like the chili and tomato. I love tomato.
Oh, tomato. Cool. I love chili, yeah. Tomato, herbs, the whole thing.
What's your favorite Italian dish?
I do love a lasagna because that's what I guess my family does really well, so I love a lasagna. But if you take me to an Italian restaurant, I'll be happy to share one of everything on the menu and eat it together with a glass of wine.
Nice, nice. Hey, now, since we're still in Italy, have you been to Italy or have any plans to go?
I have not been. I would like to go, definitely, but not as yet, not as yet.
Oh.
Have you been?
I have.
Oh, no. Isn't that terrible that I haven't been?
Oh, I know. I'm putting you to shame. Me too. Jasmine, be nice to the guests. Be nice.
You did years ago.
Well, next time I go, I'll take you with me.
Okay. Well, that'd be fine.
That would be good. But enough about Italy, because then I'm just going to get really hungry, because we do actually have a – well, we recorded this a little bit earlier. It's October now. I know, but we did record this on a day that we will be doing our first gig in our indie team together. That's how we kind of got to know each other through our mutual friend, Esther.
And I feel like now we're probably just going to be bringing up food, restaurants and Italy in all our improv sketches.
Probably. So shall we? We'll talk about our indie team, if you like, about One Night Stand.
Yes, yes. So we have our first gig tonight, so we'll see how it goes. I'm pretty sure it's going to thunderstorm on us, so I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Certainly go out with a bang if it does happen. But no, I'm really looking forward to the show, and I think it'll be awesome.
Yeah, we've been practicing a lot, and for anyone who wonders how improv teams can practice, we can. We're more working on how would you describe it? You've got a way with words.
I would say, well, I'd say that we work on the skills that you bring to the scene. Obviously, you don't know what you're going to say. You don't know how it's going to go. You don't know who's going to fall over at what point in time. But if you've got the skills behind you to know how to deal with it, then you're in a good spot and you're going to bring together a good scene.
That's true. Speaking of skills, you also do stand-up comedy. So how did you get started there?
I started because I had a background in theatre. When I first moved to Sydney, the first sort of thing that I fell into was theatre. And I find being a performer, you take what opportunity you can because there's so few of them. Mm. So if one time somebody needs an actress, then I'm your actress. If someone needs a stand-up comic, then I'm that. So it just so happened that the first thing I did was a play. And it was Confusions is the name of the play. And I just learnt the skills of you know, auditioning for a role, the rehearsal process, and then going into production for, you know, however many weeks. And that was really cool and I really enjoyed it. But at some point when you maybe can't commit to a full piece of theatre or you're just not getting the role mm-hmm. that you wanted to get, stand-up was is an opportunity to get on stage
yeah.
and do your own material without anyone sort of prior approval.
Yeah.
You're sort of going through – when you're auditioning, you're going through the process of saying, I think I would be good at doing this. I need somebody else to believe in me and give me the part. Whereas stand-up, it's more freeing that you're like – I can be given just 5 minutes on stage. Mm-hmm. I can do whatever I want within reason. I mean, you'd want to get invited back, but you can, you know, you write your own content, you perform it how you want, and as long as the audience enjoys it, you've really done your job. So it's very liberating and freeing in that way because it's yeah. different from theatre. But certainly I wouldn't I don't know how people who I knew would just jump onto a stage and on like and do stand up as a first open mic with no other prior experience. Yeah. I would be terrified because I was lucky that I had that background that I wasn't, you know, nervous about being on stage or anything like that, and I could just concentrate on what would be funny. And of course it was, you know, I had no idea, and it was what I'd written. I'd almost written it like a script in a way that it would work in theatre but not in stand-up, and it mm-hmm. wasn't as punchy as it okay. should be and so forth. So it's then it becomes a process of just working on your own material and, yeah. and making sure it's just tightening it up and making it as good as possible. And the difference there is that you do it on stage. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people will see a joke in its early stages and you think as a theatre person, you're like, oh, like that should be rehearsed. I can't believe someone has seen something that wasn't polished. But that's part of the joy of stand-up, that you write your audience edits, they say.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. And what do you find funnier, like an observational comment, or do you prefer storytelling?
I like to play characters. Mm. So I find probably that's another thing that I've brought across from theatre, in that I do like to, instead of telling the story and set I'll just go straight into a character, and hopefully if I've done it well and the mannerisms and the tone of voice and so forth is there, mm-hmm. people will pick up on that's a character, so you don't have to explain it. So that's what I really like to do. And then the other stuff I find it comes in addition to mm-hmm. that. If I've got some good jokes in character to do,
okay.
then the rest will get built around that.
That makes sense. Speaking of characters, I know you do a lot of sketch. We actually did a little sketch together as well, and it was part of a series about things that you wish that you could say. So tell us a bit more about the series, and also explain to the listeners about the two videos that you've done. So very yes. entertaining.
Thank you. So I've just had the idea of just putting together little sketches, not long ones, that are about the things that you wish you could say in certain situations and how awkward it is when you just want to, but you know you can't. And I never do. I shouldn't kid you and say that I'm just like, say whatever I want. No, I'm very conscious in public. But so we did one that was on the train, and the idea was just things you wish you could say when someone sits next to you or is being really annoying on the train. And just train comedy, I find, is just very related to my life, because I probably spend on my work days an hour on the train for the commute time. And it's not somewhere you want to be. Mm. You either want to get to work to start working on whatever it is you have to do that day, or you're getting home. It's not the place you want to be. So I do often sit there and think, I can really start to appreciate why some people just lose it. And so passive aggressively, instead of losing it, I like to write sketch about the things that that annoy me. So we did a sketch on a train, the logistics of which I'm so glad came together. So that one's available at the moment. And I forgot to tell you, I don't think I ever mentioned, but so we went, you know, we jumped on a train at a certain time mm-hmm. when a couple of stops while filming, it was certainly, we were time efficient, if anything. And then I got to the station And then we wrapped and that was fine. So we all moved on. And then I thought, oh, I might just grab a couple of shots of the station.
Okay.
Just in case I need it for the sketch. And so I thought that was completely allowed, but I went to take some, and it was just on my GoPro, so it was very subtle, but I had, after a couple of minutes, the train guard come over to me and say, excuse me, ma'am, I just need to ask what you're doing. And I was like, I was just taking some footage for a project. And he was like, okay, it's just, you know, sometimes, you know, head office will see on the cameras people recording, and I just need to be able to tell them what you're doing. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I was going to leave now. He was like, that's fine, it's fine. So I obviously didn't think I was too sus, but I realized you probably can't do a whole shoot without them picking up on it at some point.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
So I did that one, and then the other one that I'm working on, the next little sketch in the same vein, is one about people who chew too loud. And I know that probably sounds, I don't know, if you hear it and it annoys you, then you'll know what I'm talking about. If it doesn't bother you, you'll be like, you are the most ridiculous person. Poor people trying to eat their sandwich and you're just complaining about how loud they chew. But it sometimes, yeah, it can be very annoying. So if you subscribe to that, you know what I'm talking about. Hopefully you'll enjoy the sketch, or you'll hate it because there's lots of chewing involved.
Well, I've seen the stills for it, and that has our fellow one-night stander,
yes,
Esther, in it. So that just the visuals made me laugh quite a lot, and so I look forward to seeing
it. Oh, good, good.
So did that go quite well?
Yeah, we had a good shoot. She didn't tell me till afterwards, because I thought, what was the most annoying thing you could eat? And it was chips.
Like, of course, chips. Yeah.
And then so I was like, okay, Esther, here's the, you know, here's where we're going to shoot, and here's the props, and your props is a bowl of chips. So by the end of the shoot, she'd eaten the whole thing, and then she's like, oh, I've been trying to eat really healthy. I couldn't even remember what chips taste like. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. You should have told me. Like, you could have eaten anything. She's like, no, it's all right. But, it went really well, and that's being edited now, and we'll have a few more to come, and hopefully they'll be out soonish.
Cool. So I'll post some links so that people know where to find your comedy, because you do have a Facebook page.
Yes.
You promote your comedy.
Yeah, I have it there and I do them on my website as well. So awesome. Definitely can keep up to date.
Very professional. Now, who are your top stand-up comics, influencers, and favourite improvisers off the top of your head?
I try not to subscribe too much to any one style, but I mean, there's a few that I just love, and I just see them on stage or, you know, on YouTube, etc. And I just think that's awesome. And Margaret Cho is one of them. I remember the first time I saw her was, I think it was on a, like a daytime TV show. Yeah. So she was being very G-rated, and she was doing, stuff just about her mum, because she's Chinese, and she does like a lot of things that are just about her family and her ethnicity. And I was just watching it going, that is so cool. Like, I have it, it's still rare that you see women performing comedy, women of culture performing comedy, and then doing it in such a professional way that you're just like, that is just awesome. So I really love her. Mm-hmm. I really do like seeing women who just are top notch. Just makes I just get really excited to see, you know, them bring their voice to the comedy scene.
What about any of the open micers, male or female, in Sydney? Is there anyone that you've noticed that you've been really blown away by and maybe chatted with them and said, hey, that was fantastic?
Look, I've heard a lot of jokes that I think, oh, I can really see how that resonates with you as a comic. I really like to see comics do jokes that are genuine, mm-hmm. and that you can see that's funny to you because you've lived it and I can relate. So I like to see that sort of thing. This is not a Sydney specific scene example or anything, but when you get someone who is really young or I could be wrong, but 90% sure that they're not married, they look like they're 17 or something, mm-hmm. and they're doing jokes about how annoying their wife is. And I'm just like, I don't believe you. Like, if you are married, then you've probably gone through the court because you're 17, but I just don't believe that's coming from an authentic place. You're trying to be somebody else. So that's why I really like to see comics doing stuff that I feel like comes from a genuine place, and that's what I try to do.
Okay. Hmm. Okay. Well, take it back to improv a little bit, actually, because you're talking about genuine and genuine places. Now that you're doing sketch and stand-up and acting and improv, how do you do you find that you've got several different mindsets when you do it, or do you think it makes you a more rounded performer? And is it, and a third layer to that question, so
it's like start writing this down. Yes,
it's like layered. It's like a three-layer cake.
Yeah.
Is there any preference that you have? Like, do you prefer improv more? Do you prefer stand-up more? Do you prefer acting more?
Yeah, I think they all have their own skill set. And so if you're across them all, or you don't have to be an expert, and I'm no expert on any of them. I'd like to say that I'm probably a student of all forms of comedy, hopefully, and master of none. Yeah. So I think that they all push you to be to develop skills in different areas. And so sometimes I think when I see a comic and you know that they you can sort of tell when they just do stand-up or they just do one sort, because their skill set is really high in one area, possibly, you know, in their delivery, say, with stand-up. But then a little bit of audience interaction and they have to go off book, it's a bit more difficult.
Yeah.
So I like to think, certainly, like the improv stuff that we do, it allows there to be a little bit more flexibility when you're doing your set, because for audience interaction and things like that.
Mm.
And that was something I can say, and, you know, critiquing myself, when I first started doing stand-up, it's not something that came easily to me. I wanted to stay on my jokes, and I was a bit worried, if I engage with the audience, how far off is it going to take us?
Yeah.
Will I be able to get it back? What are they going to say that I won't know what to do? So having improv and that sort of flexibility there makes me more confident to engage with the audience. And I do know, like, I've certainly not come so far that I can, you know, say that I'm an expert on that, because I still, when I do interact with the audience, a little trick that I use to make myself feel more comfortable is I always do it in character.
Okay.
So if I'm the first character that I bring out, I'll get into character and then start interacting with the audience, and I find that is I don't know if it's just the way I work, but I find it much easier to interact that way.
Okay.
And I don't personally like, maybe I'm too sensitive, but I don't like to see, like, too much heated sort of discussion or something between an audience member and a comic. So I do like to keep it light. And sometimes when you go to, not pick on someone, but you'll just go to look at someone in the audience and they look at you like, please don't. And I think, I want to just stop and tell you, dude, I'm not like that. Please. Like, I respect that you're here. I respect that you're in the audience and that you've come to see the show. I want you to have a really good time. So my interaction with you will hopefully be positive and make your experience better.
Exactly, yeah, you don't want to fight.
Yeah, exactly. And I know some Tommy's doing that, their style, but it's certainly not mine. Now, in your three-layered cake, I don't know if I've answered your question.
No, you did well,
Okay, good.
Now, we did talk about sketch writing, and actually, referring to my questions here.
Yes, please do.
Well, so you do a lot of different characters, and where did they come from? Are they from work, or are they from home life, or from you when you were younger? Where's the inspiration come from?
Yeah, I do like to draw on real people, and I think that's, I don't know if they teach it in every form of comedy, but they should, in that just observe your surroundings and the weird people that you come into contact with. I mean, I think we all should do that, and I think performers do. So there are some characters, especially when, like after hours, about 10 o'clock up on a weeknight on public transport,
yeah,
that's a great time to observe your surrounding. So sometimes I'll use that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the characters that I've probably more developed, though, come from my family. Mm-hmm. So I might pick a few traits of a certain family member, and then I'll heighten it and take it to a like a different place. So it doesn't. So the character doesn't that I create doesn't. That's I don't look at them and go, oh, that's definitely like that family member, but it's created from that and just heightened and changed. So they're probably the characters that I really like to play in my show that I do, which is like a mix of theatre and stand-up, a little bit of improv thrown in there. It's all based on the characters in my family, and some of them are really big, loud and Italian, and some, you know, like a quirk onto themselves and things like that. So they're my favourite type of characters to play, certainly.
Are there any stereotypical kind of Italian lady characters? Like, can you do like can you do like, obviously people can't see it, but hear, they'll be able to hear you if you were to do like a couple of lines?
Yeah, I do. I always try and find the balance between the stereotype and the real voice of the character, because I mean, I love comedy where culture is, you know, really engaged with well, but not making fun of someone.
Yeah.
So I do try to have a little in between, but certainly in my comedy, you know, I might come straight on stage and the first thing I do is go straight into a nonna voice and go, oh, hello, I see you didn't iron your shirt. That's okay. After the show, I iron it for you, and look a much nicer. And then there might be, you know, somebody. And then, you know, depending on what venue in what suburb of Sydney you're in, if it's the in the city, you can usually find someone in a suit. So then you straight away, oh, I see you. You have iron, yeah? You didn't need to tell me, I can tell. So, yeah. So something, and in that way, you know, that sort of thing that, It is a joke, and it is engaging, but I've never had a problem with that, anyone being offended by it.
Yeah, that didn't seem offensive. It's just like, and like, it's obvious, you know, nice Italian. They're like, yeah, you need to look nice, don't
you? Yeah, and I think a lot of people, like just people who have no filter, and I think, I don't know if it's as we get older we just care less. I've heard people say that, but I've noticed with my certainly my nonna or grandparents or things like that, that they don't care if it's offensive. They will tell you if that looks bad or if that needs to
That's
be
true.
Ironed.
That's
or,
true.
So
I guess, yeah, the BS filter just seems to disappear as you get older.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, in fact.
I was actually discussing that very thing with one of my housemates about how you know, you just stop kind of trying to, you just get older and you start to go, you know, I don't care anymore. It doesn't mean that you don't care about life. It just means you're like, don't try to please everyone.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, when we're old ladies, we'd be quite funny old ladies. And we've actually done those kind of scenes, I think. And
yes.
When we practice sometimes, it'll come up that we're all elderly and we're just say really silly things in a rest home. And it's funny because that's probably what our grandparents are like, so that's where the inspiration comes from. It's funny how the brain can pull up all that stuff just through little hints and suggestions, and your subconscious goes, oh, yes, I know how grandma acts, and then out it comes.
Yep.
That's how improv happens, guys. That's how improv happens. And where do you see yourself in the next few years?
Look, I hope to be doing more of the same. Because it's one of those things, I guess, performing is one of those industries where you do have to be what's needed at the time. So, if they need an actor, then that's what I'll be, or a comic, then that's what I'll be. But I think that's something that is beyond our control.
Yeah.
What opportunities come up, especially in Sydney, where there are maybe aren't that many opportunities in compared to other cities, probably more than others, though, at the same time. But that's something you're not in control of. You're in control of the work that you produce, the content, and how good that is. So I'm always looking to work on my own material, my own writing and make sure that that is as good as it possibly can be, and developing all the time. I mean, what I did 2 years ago was the best I could do then. But now, 2 years later, with more experience or something, I can do something better. Yeah. So I'm always trying to improve my stuff. I think Oprah, I think that's a line I've just taken off Oprah about doing what you can at the time. So sorry about that.
Thanks, Oprah.
Thanks, Oprah. Love you. But, yeah, so I hope that my work is always improving, and then you just be open to opportunities. I think I could see myself, though, at some point, I would like to engage more in writing. Mm-hmm. Then I like to perform. I love to perform. But, yeah, I don't think we can do that in the nursing home, so I feel like...
No, I don't think so, dear.
Might be a bit cold out there. and I sometimes whinge about having to be out past 9 o'clock already. So I do see at some point maybe writing taking over the performing area.
Okay.
But maybe I'm not quite 70 yet, so maybe I've still got a few years left in me.
Do you think you might do more workshops or training in the area of sketch writing, and maybe even overseas, like Second City? I know you've studied there a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't. I really loved it. And so it was very cool. So I did do Second City in LA, and I did some impro there. And, yeah, I'd love to go back and do some sketch.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it because it was it's like the Sydney scene but heightened in every way. So it was very cool. And I do like it's a very cool city as well. And I noticed that in Sydney – you know, I might go from my day job to a gig, and, you know, there's that time when you finish work to, you know, waiting around to do your gig sort of thing, that you're like, oh, jeez, you know, waiting. Whereas when I'm in LA, I'm not doing a day job, I'm not doing an office job, that I'm just really engaged with what I'm doing there, to the point that, like, even, you know, I might have my days free, I find myself even talking to, you know, the guy on the street that is hanging out making flowers or something. I remember one guy I was talking to started telling me conspiracy theories. And normally, like, when I'm in Sydney, I just, you know, you're just going, you got to get home, you got to get to work, you got to get to a gig, you got to do something. Because I had, you know, time free, he said, yeah, telling me conspiracy theories. And I was just like, okay, hold up. I know I may not look it, but I'm actually a rampant conspiracy theorist. So don't you try to be more conspiracy theory than me. Let me tell you some of my material. And he seemed to really engage, but actually he did tell me some stuff I didn't know.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, so that sort of when I am somewhere else and to do something in relation to performing, I find I'm really concentrated on that, whereas, you know, here I am. You know, you split your focus because it's life.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you don't have the distraction of day jobs when you're on holiday and that's your focus, and it does change things. So.
Yeah.
So since we're talking about work and day jobs, so your day job's quite a bit different to your artistic side.
Yeah, it is. And I don't mind it because my day job, I do it's in a sort of a community service space, so I do like to sometimes when I feel, you know, artistically I'm not getting where I want to go, there has been an audition that I was really excited for and I just bombed, or a performance that I bombed. It's nice to actually go and do some work that is positive, constructive, and also, you know, something you're getting paid to do constantly. So I do enjoy it for that reason, but it's just I think it's just part of being an artist that you usually need a day job. And I know when I first started, I thought, oh, okay, well, surely you're not a real artist until you can be doing it. I almost want to cringe at myself for thinking this, but, yeah, you can't be an artist unless you're doing it full-time and getting paid for it and making a living equal to the sort of income that you should be on at your age and things like that. But it's not the case.
Yeah.
But, usually most people in this space do have to have a day job, and so it does split sort of commitment you can put to it.
Yeah.
But, you just got to find your balance and hopefully find something that you are happy to do as well.
Yes, yeah, that helps a lot. Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't really know. I know a few people who do comedy full time, but most of them, that's stand up comedy. In terms of improv, to do that full time, particularly in Sydney, there isn't any money in it. People do go along to shows, but the performers, we never paid. We do it for the love of it. It's just how it is. It's just the community is very small. But it would be nice to make money doing what you love. As long as you don't detest your day job, I think that's good.
Yeah,
that helps, exactly. You know.
Yeah. I was at a masterclass or a workshop, and Peter Garrett was there talking about, like, he's so tall.
Oh,
I've never
not oil?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he was, this is more recently, this is maybe just a couple of years ago, and he was, you know, just talking about his experience in when he was a performer and so forth. And he was like, yeah, but it's good to have a good day job because you need to make some good money. And that's just as important as anything else because that's you know, that's what's gonna allow you to pursue creative endeavors if you can pay your rent, basically. I always think of that. If even Peter Garrett's thinking about it, then it's okay to have a day job. I think sometimes I think they call it the imposter syndrome, that you feel like, or I often feel like this, that, you know, I'm not quite there as an artist. I'm not at the top of my game, so I'm not quite, I can't really say that I'm a performer, but you can. If you're performing and creating, then you're an artist.
Yeah, I've been through the same thing myself. I used to think, oh, well, if you've got a day job and then you're doing a little bit of other stuff, it's, oh, no, but I'm not really an actor or a comedian, blah, blah, blah. No, but you are. If you're writing and you're regularly performing and you also have a day job and you're networking, you're doing all that stuff, then you are doing, you're just doing, you're doing both.
Yeah.
And a lot of people find it very admirable because it is tough going for, you have, especially if you've had day jobs and you haven't, and you've stopped, started your career or you've taken a risk, and to still go out there and do all this other stuff as well. But I think it's great, and I encourage anyone who wants to do stand-up, improv, any of that stuff, as long as you have a good stable day job and there's some flexibility there, there's always things, workshops on weekends, there's gigs on weeknight, there's the way the improv schools are set up is for people who work full-time so that we can do classes in the evening. So you go to work, you make your money, you can pay for your classes, and you go do your classes and then do your grad shows and everything.
Yeah.
That's the idea, because they don't really have the schools full time. I think if they tried to do that, then that would be quite tricky. People would need to get student loans,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah, how much are you going to pay for stuff?
And I don't know that the government would really – the governments are always a bit funny with that, the arts. But that's kind of unfortunately a thing that – is everywhere in the world, and that's not just exclusive to Australia, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
What did I put here? Oh, the Sydney scene, since we were talking about it.
Well, it is.
Because you're not originally from Sydney, are you?
No, but certainly I've been here now 11 years, so probably had it's my adult life here.
Mm-hmm.
I think... Yeah, I want to say it's quite small, but then in comparison to other places, maybe it's quite big and lively.
Mm.
But certainly I find it's probably the case that in a stand-up lineup, you can still be the only female comic in the room.
Yeah.
And I thought, why is that the case in Sydney? But it's just as much the case in LA, I found that.
Oh.
That when I was over there, and I was sort of asking people, especially when it was a female comic running the room, I was like, you know, so do you see that here as well? Mm. And like, yeah, you do. But I think that it just, for me, you're taking it as a positive, it just gives you more opportunity to have a more authentic voice, or like there's, you want to be, as I said before, you want to be talking from something, from an authentic place and be genuine. And there's just, I guess, more material that hasn't been covered yet because we're still not the main person that you think about when you think of stand-up comedy.
Mm.
So I think that's good, and it gives us opportunity and to put stuff that we find funny on stage, and if it's relatable enough, anyone will find it funny.
That's true. Mm. And I found just through just life in general, particularly performance medium of clowning and improv, that life and people are funny.
Mm.
And I would find just, I don't know if this is the same for you, but in my experience that I find everything is funny and I'm shameless and I don't care and I'm really brave when I'm on stage. But then up until recently, I still could, if I made little errors or mistakes or I got frustrated with myself or if I was clumsy in public, I didn't see the humor in it still. Mm. I still couldn't quite laugh at myself. And then I had to, now I've started doing that. If I nearly accidentally trip up on something and maybe no one notices, I actually just laugh out loud at myself. I think it's hilarious. And I'm like, physical comedy. And that's since I started doing clowning. And if anyone wants to laugh with me, I'd be like, you're welcome.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm like, it's cool. I don't care if that was planned. Thank you. Because it is funny and doesn't matter. I didn't hurt myself. I've become more clumsy and I'm just like, oh, well, screw it. You know, I'm a clown now.
Yep.
Clowning is freeing.
And I think the thing is, every single person knows what it's like to have a clumsy moment in public. It's not something that you know, only half the population are doing. So I think we can all relate to that. And it is how you embrace something like that helps. That's right.
Yeah, being able to laugh whenever we fail or make mistakes or do silly things. And it actually makes it easier. And then because it takes so much more energy to be angry or upset. And there's been lots of instances I've had of that in my personal life recently. And then now I'm just laughing. So much mental energy that goes into worrying about it. It's like, just laugh because that's easier. Yeah. People need laughter.
Yeah.
We really do. That's why when people come to an improv show or sketch show, stand-up comedy show, there's a reason why they go, like, I want to laugh.
Yeah.
Because if everyone was completely happy and content with their lives, they wouldn't go to comedy. They'd be like, I don't need that. I can make myself laugh.
Yeah.
You know, and they watch shows like Seinfeld still classic. I'm still watching old episodes and I'm laughing because – they do the kind of things that we try to do in improv. If you watch episodes of Seinfeld, it's kind of like watching sketch or improv.
Yeah.
And you can see, you know, the heightening and the craziness and then the relationships between the characters. And I sit down, I take notes rewatching it. Because when I watch it as a teenager, I'm just like, great observational comedy. Oh, my God, he's so right. Cherry's so right.
And I wouldn't have even known to think that, to be honest. I would have just thought, huh, that's funny, but never actually engage with why it's funny. So I think that's
very good writing. And it comes from life. It's apparently stuff that that Jerry's noticed and observed, then he'll talk about it on stage in his stand-up, and then they'll make that the subject of whichever episode that they're doing.
Yeah.
And then the characters, I've been just studying it. It's one of my all-time favourite shows, but I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's important for anyone who wants to study comedy to study Seinfeld. It's even though it's the fashion and the technology a little bit out of date, the characters, even though they're appalling characters and incredibly selfish, they all kind of have a heart. And every time they try to do really dumb things, they always fail miserably at it. So it doesn't matter because it still has a nice happy ending. It doesn't matter what stupid thing George or Kramer or Elaine did. It doesn't matter that they're all selfish. They're amusing to watch because people can't be, they're showing what human beings are like. And they're actually just showing all the good and bad things. It's like putting everything on a platter and saying, this is what people were like in the Western one. I'm like, all the little things we complain about.
Yeah.
Like in your video, in your sketch series, like they're just rewatching it, it's such a good show. It's one of those shows that you can go back to. I think Friends is probably similar.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's why it was so successful. Plus, you had quite good looking cast members, but I don't get it. But you had people sitting around talking, and that's so interesting. That's what we will be doing at our gig, which was last month because it's October now. It was fantastic. We had best scenes ever.
You know that scene we did with the thing?
Awesome. Oh, my God, when the mother and the daughter and they had this amazing conversation of fighting and then they were hugging and it felt so real.
It was real.
It was just, yes.
It was real.
Oh, it's beautiful. You guys, if you're ever in Sydney and if you're based outside of Australia, you need to come see One Night Stand.
Yeah. Basically just book your flight. I know it's a long flight, but to be honest, I enjoy the flight. Or anywhere is I really like to. But yeah, it's just the opportunity to catch up on all the movies that you wanted to watch previously. I probably shouldn't spend 14 hours of my day watching Game of Thrones on catch up, but I can't go anywhere, so don't judge me for it.
That would be a good sketch idea too, flying a plane. I like flying. I like takeoff. I don't like landing.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of the, like, I don't know, just that moment when we're up in the air and I'm like, yay! And my inner child's like, yeah, it's fun, like I'm on a roller coaster. But I have to be careful because my ears pop a little bit. And I'm like, ouch.
Yeah.
But I don't like that bit. But then the entertainment is always good. Yep. Because I'm a light sleeper, so I'll move around and I'll have little micro naps. Some people take a sleeping pill and sleep during
the flight. I can't do that.
I'll wake up really groggy. I sleep as I need to, and then when everyone else is kind of asleep, I'll just be watching like stand-up or things like that, or various things, and I'll just be like watching stuff and like trying not to laugh loudly.
Yeah,
and watching movies.
Seriously? What? Everybody else here is asleep.
I watched four movies! And then it's just so nice, and having walking down the aisle and going to the bathroom when nobody is, when everyone else is asleep, and be like, yay, it's my plane.
It's my plane. It's my plane. I have, like, I'm actually, I try not to even admit it to myself, but I'm actually a bit scared of flying, so, which is the worst thing, because I'm only scared of flying over oceans and really big oceans. I don't even want to get into, what can you do? You can't do anything if anything goes wrong. So I really like to be in one of the middle aisles, and I like to just be very engaged in what I'm watching, and it takes my mind off it. But if I start thinking about it, I don't know. I've never panicked, but I just know thinking about it now, I'm like, but what can you do? Like, you can't swim to shore. especially our flight from Sydney to LA. No. 10 minutes, basically 10 minutes after takeoff to 10 minutes to when you land, you're not swimming ashore even if you had some chance. But so that's why I really enjoy just watching shows.
Yeah, well, it's a good distraction. Well, you would have flown over the Atlantic. I've been over the Atlantic a couple of different ways, once by plane and once by cruise ship. And the weather was a bit choppy both times. And the Atlantic, with the plane, they're like, there's a bit of turbulence. I like flying, but when they say turbulence and it starts to move and I freak out and I was scared. And my friends said, don't worry. And they're like, put your seatbelts on. And I'm like, and in my head, I'm like, we're going to die. Like, be calm. On the outside, calm. And so, fuck, we're going to die. And then this turbulence settled down. It was just a bit of wind.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky whenever we were flying on a cruise ship or anything like that, that it wasn't so bad, even though we've had Hurricane Sandy, but I wasn't flying at the same time.
Yeah.
She was nearby, hanging around in Hawaii. We'd gotten out of there to go to the East Coast, but it's scary, you know. But
I wouldn't have coped very well. But I do the thing like you, that you just try to look really cool and like you're almost bored by the whole experience externally and internally. Like a little panic attack going on in your heart.
Yeah. It's the acting.
Yeah.
It's the acting. Well, our time is almost up. So what would you like to promote or plug?
Well, you're certainly welcome to go to my website, because I put all my sketch up there. So that's at elisacristallo.com. And I usually do put my sketch on my socials. So Facebook is at Elisa Cristallo Actress, and same handle for Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually put bits and pieces up on socials sort of gigs and stuff like that. And on my website is the more polished, finished stuff. And I also have my blog up there as well. So more than welcome to check those out. And if there's anything you like, feel free to shoot me a message or let me know what you did or didn't like. I'm open to it.
Yeah. So you blog. Tell us a little bit about the blog.
It really has no structure at all. But I just sometimes I feel like I'd like to write about that. And it's So it's just things that come up and hopefully some relatable sort of stuff. I sort of started it just before I turned 30 with a blog about things that I know at 30 that I should have known at 20.
Oh, I like it.
And then the idea of being I should write one at 40 and then 50, but it seemed like a long time to change shows. So I thought I should probably write this a little bit more frequently. So yeah, there's just some content up there, and sometimes I'll do a blog and then that'll develop into a sketch or a little play or a story or a monologue or something. So it's a good place to start. So you're welcome to check it out.
Oh, definitely. I think that's about all the questions I had for you, and we've got a gig to get to anyway. So
that's true. Thanks for having me. It's been awesome. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. And you can find us in the usual places. We're on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. And thank you again.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.